Hey, welcome back to the Mark Mosey Show, and joining me right now here on the phone line to talk all things sports here on a Thursday, great friend of mine. He does a great job as an anchor reporter for Spectrum Sports 360 on News 13. His name is Luke Hendrick. Luke, my man, how you doing today?
Always a pleasure to talk to you, buddy. I'm doing well. Thanks for asking.
You were actually last night watching the UCF-Cincinnati game where UCF survives in double overtime. Where, what is it, Cincinnati tried to go half-court shot, but it was after the buzzer. How crazy of a basketball game was this?
You know, full disclosure, I turned it on. I was flipping back and forth between that and the Louisville-Syracuse game because I'm a Louisville fan. But I watched fully the last couple minutes of regulation and the overtimes. Holy cow, crazy game. It was like one of those where it was like you knew watching. And I'm not trying to disrespect UCF, but Cincinnati is clearly the better team. But UCF played hard, man. They don't give up. They've gotten smacked around a couple times here in conference. Everything about that game, the way it started, the numbers, Cesar DeJesus had a couple turnovers early, and then he gets benched, and you're like, dude, this is going to get ugly fast. But credit Johnny Dawkins, man, that's a tough place to go into and get a win. Those guys did not quit. Crazy game. And watching Cincinnati in, like, the last couple minutes of regulation and both overtimes, their offense was atrocious. It was, let's just let Jaron Cumberland do whatever he wants, and then the other one can hit a three. It was awful. So good for UCF. I mean, you got to point out that Cincinnati did not execute well, but that's a heck of a win for UCF, man. They deserved it.
Does that, like when you take a step back, is that college basketball in general where you're like, oh, well, this team's good, and then they shoot themselves in the foot overall?
I mean, I just don't think the AAC is very good this year. I don't think that's the general consensus for college basketball. I think it had a really good year last year, mainly because we're looking through the scope of what UCF was last year with all those upperclassmen. But the league itself, I just don't think is as top-to-bottom talented this year. There's a pretty wide gap between who's really good in the league and then everyone else. But yeah, Cincinnati to me was very disappointing. You know, I'm not watching Cincinnati religiously.
Yeah.
But when you got Jaron Cumberland and you got the guys that they have, Trayvon Scott, Chris Vogt, the other Cumberland coming off the bench, they should have been a lot better. And everything about that game was like, okay, you should probably win this thing by double digits. And maybe that's a game for Cincinnati, who's, I think, projected 10 or 11 seed in the tournament right now, where they say, okay, we got to get right. Or it's just, hey, if they want to play ISO basketball like Nevada did last year with the Martin twins, then you're going to get beat a lot of times. You can win that way in the AAC where the talent isn't as great, but that's not going to help you in March.
I'm asking all of college basketball where, because you saw last night where you're like, all right, Duke, maybe they figured it out. They got that big win at UNC, and then they get smoked out of the building by NC State. I don't even know who's good. I have no idea, buddy.
I have no problem with it, though. Like, I think Gonzaga's really good, but I think this is a classic year of Gonzaga's better than everyone, every single person they play against. I think Baylor's really good. They're elite defensively. I still have questions about them on offense. And I think Kansas is really good. But then I look at everyone else. I think this Duke team, this is no disrespect, but when Trey Jones is your go-to guy offensively, you got some problems. Now, he's vastly improved, but he's not an offensive-minded guy. So I think there's good teams. I don't necessarily think this is a bad thing. I don't think it's a step back for college basketball. This reminds me a lot of the 2011 year when UConn won it all. We could have a team like that just come out of nowhere. We could also see a lot of parity in the tournament again, where you have a lot of upsets. I know we predict that every year, but this year I think a lot of the mid-major conferences are better than we normally give them credit for. So I think this is just what it is this year in college basketball, and I'm okay with it.
Okay. Should I root for a mid-major then to finally break through and win the national championship?
I'm not going that, like, define mid-major. If you're talking, like, mid-major, like, Dayton, or are you talking, like, mid-major, like, Seton Hall?
No, I'm talking like, a Dayton. Like, or you know, we had Loyola Chicago. Like, I want one of those teams to break through and beat one of these Blue Bloods. I want to see it.
You know, if Dayton had, like, five or six losses, I would say Dayton would probably get in, but I think no one's going to sleep on them. Not like you should, because Dayton's a very good program. They've been an excellent mid-major. But the fact that they just have two losses and they're both in overtime this year, I don't think anyone's really going to sleep on them. But I can see a team from the Big East. I can see a Seton Hall, a Creighton, maybe a Butler, someone of that caliber, you know, go on a little run. Yeah, I think it's one of those years. But I still think you'll have the blue blood in the end win it.
How about we don't even hand out the Naismith Player of the Year award? Because I don't think anyone deserves it this year. How about you?
I would disagree with you on that. I think there's probably guys that are definitely deserving. We just don't. We're just, and it's not one of those clear cut guys. Like, if we don't have a clear cut guy, like a couple years ago, it was really just two. It was Denzel Valentine and Buddy Hield. I think you have a lot of really, really good players. But the problem is your top two teams in the country are good teams, not led by dominant 25 point per game scores.
So there's no Zion. That's what you're saying.
How often is there a Zion?
Yeah. Okay. You know what's crazy about that? Duke did not win the title last year with that team. It's crazy. They didn't even
It was Mike Krzyzewski's worst coach job. His worst coaching jobs.
They didn't make the Final Four, and they should have been bounced by UCF in round two. That's the legacy of that team. It's shocking.
They should have been bounced by UCF. They should have been bounced by Virginia Tech. And then they lost to a really good Michigan State team. I mean, that Duke team was ultra-talented. And I'm not saying Mike Krzyzewski's a bad coach now. I just don't think he maximized that roster. The Zion injury threw it for a loop a little bit. But I even think without Zion, the R.J. Barrett and Cam Reddish combination is better than that team this year.
I agree with you. All I think I take out of this year is Roy Williams is losing his mind after every loss. That's all I'll remember.
I feel for the guy, but I'm never going to doubt Roy Williams.
I'm not going to doubt Roy Williams.
Like, it's rough, and this is what happens with Carolina, where they're not like the one-and-done factory. You know, sometimes things just kind of ebb and flow more with those programs where you're not guaranteed. Because Carolina isn't the, hey, we're getting three, four one-and-done freshman year. That's just not who North Carolina is. Sometimes it's more of the development game, and can we build a program? And, yeah, we can plug in a freshman or a rising sophomore or something here and be really good. I just think they got in a year where how they were built was too Cole Anthony-centric because they had to be, and he gets hurt, and then that's kind of their identity's out the window then. I feel really bad for North Carolina, but, I mean, these things happen.
We'll end the college basketball conversation with this. I know you used to cover the Big Ten. Are the two best teams Illinois and Maryland? Like, how did that happen?
You just had to say Illinois because they beat Penn State the other night. I think Illinois is a top four team in the Big Ten.
Yes.
Yeah, I think right now Penn State and Maryland are the two best teams in the Big Ten. I do. Because the thing about that Penn State game the other night is Penn State did not have their second leading scorer, Myron Jones, even though they won eight in a row until that game against Illinois, who is very, very good, by the way, and Bradder, a playmaking guard, I think limited them in that game. But, hey, Illinois, give all the credit to them, man. They are a really good team, but I think Maryland and Penn State are the top dogs in that conference.
This is the best Illinois team since the 05 team that lost the title game to UNC. It's been that long.
Is it, though?
They're relevant. And they're playing basketball. Yeah. That's how bad. Okay, that team was phenomenal and should have won the national title, but that's how bad Illinois basketball has been in the last 15 years. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, like a team that might have been better than this was like Dimitri McKamey, Mike Tisdale, Mike Davis. Like, that group was really good.
You're such a hoops.
I think they won like 23 games.
You're such a hoops guy. I love it. Are you like me where you're just... You just kind of sitting there hibernating, just waiting for March Madness like I am?
I am. Like, I don't get into March Madness until, like, January, but I had, like, the best discussion yesterday when I got into work with my boss, Austin Lyon. We were just like, let's go back in time and just pick out guys that we just hated for no reason. Like, guys that just irked us in college basketball. We had, like, a 30-minute conversation about it. I didn't get, like, half my work done because of that.
Okay, so, like, J.J. Redick on Duke, did he make the list?
No, he didn't bother me so much. And, like, for the record, like, these are guys that, like, I respect. Like, they didn't do anything wrong. They were just good players, but they were on teams that I didn't like. Or it was just, like, the way they were talked about. I just didn't like them. It was always, for me, Aaron Kraft. I just always pulled my hair out listening to Aaron Kraft.
For our listeners who don't know, like, Aaron
Kraft, he's a great player. He was a great college basketball player. But, oh my gosh, did I pull my hair out listening to people talk about him.
Wait, was he on Ohio State?
He was on Ohio State.
You didn't like that, huh? How about Psycho T, Tyler Hansborough on UNC?
Loved him.
Is he your spirit animal? Is that what it is?
He was like, based on the way I played, and I'm only like 6'2", uh-huh. But based on the discussion of how I played in my position, my friends and I decided that I was Kevin Love, just 9 inches
outlet,
shorter.
Outlet passes over your head. That's what you do.
Chin it, turn, gun it.
I'm trying to think players that angered me, or I don't know. Like, were you an Adam Morrison guy?
I was indifferent. I mean, I didn't like JJ. I liked JJ, but I didn't like Duke. Sounds like Joakim Noah always got under my skin.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't need to hear you talk after every basket or like make a face. That's just me.
Okay. How about Jimmer Fredette?
Like Jimmer. I like Jimmer a lot. I'm trying to think who irked me.
Who's a bad guy out there? That's what you're saying. Who? I don't know if we've had many villains like that.
I mean, Grayson Allen was villain for a while.
Oh, yeah. Especially when he's tripping people and knocking them in the groin. Yeah.
And it's the whole Duke thing. I mean, Duke and Syracuse are the guys that have these repetitive, hey, you're the crown of the guy everyone's supposed to dislike.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was Leitner, then it moved on eventually to J.J. Redick, and then it got on. It was Greg Paulus for a little bit, and then it was Grayson Allen. And the Syracuse, it was Eric Devendorf, Trevor Cooney. And I was watching the Syracuse game last night, and I'm I usually have a field day with this. I don't know who I'm supposed to dislike on the Syracuse game.
I'm trying to think
that just speaks to the state of Syracuse basketball right now.
You know what's interesting? Where you're with Lou Gehrig, it's mostly I gravitate to players I like. I don't sit around and just evil. I don't do that when I look at college basketball.
No, but I'm just oh my gosh, that guy irks me. There's plenty of guys that I just absolutely love to watch, and that I loved from afar that weren't on my team. We were just having that conversation. It's fresh in my mind yesterday. Who just got under your skin? Fiondu Cabangeli was it for me last year.
It's a great name.
Really? It's a fantastic name.
Great name.
he was fantastic for Florida State. He is so skilled
uh-huh.
and coming off the bench doing what he did. But I joke with Austin all the time that Fiondu Cabangeli had a foul on Louisville last year in the closing seconds of that game. Was not called. It was an egregious foul. And then Florida State went on to win, and Louisville's season was derailed from that point on.
I think Grayson Allen wins this debate of players where you just want to punch him in the face. I think that's what happens. But look, you know what? Give him credit. He's in the NBA. All right? He's a baller.
Yeah, everyone I talk to, I talk to former college basketball players that played against him, and they were he was great. He was great. You know, he was intense. He was fiery. And maybe that was because I had a camera in their face and they didn't want to say anything bad and ruin their reputation. But hey, they were pretty steadfast in being he's good. He's the guy.
Luke's like me where you have conversations with people, then they look at you dead in the eye. We're not recording, are we? No. And then they really start talking. Doesn't that happen to you all the time?
Well, that's why I put a piece of tape over the recording light.
That's what you do.
Yeah.
Real quick, you guys did a great job over the last couple of days with News 13 covering the Daytona 500 and everything that happened with Ryan Newman. How crazy is this story, buddy, where he walks out of the hospital yesterday? It's insane.
It's a testament to the advances NASCAR's made and the safety changes that have been implemented since the death of Dale Earnhardt Sr. I mean, for that crash to happen, and not just that crash. I mean, we saw him go airborne, and then he got hit by Corey LaJoie. I think that's where, you know, the major damage and the concern came in. But, I mean, if you go back, I mean, Dale Earnhardt, the death of Dale Earnhardt and that fatal crash was, I believe, on Tuesday. And, I mean, we went back and watched the replay of the crash, and it's not visually, it doesn't shake you up. I mean, knowing what happened, sure, but it's not a violent wreck. And then you compare it to Ryan Newman, where not only does he live, I mean, he walks out under his own power. Like
I know.
Was in a wheelchair. It was incredible. But this is a testament to NASCAR and the Hans devices they've implemented, how safer they have made the cars, how they have moved the drivers more towards the center of the car, that it can, that not only can you survive a crash like that and how horrific it looked, but that less than 48 hours later, you are walking out of the hospital under your own power. It's incredible.
People were texting me Monday night. They thought he was dead. That's the messages I was getting from people. I'm not going to lie to you. And, like, you're right. He's walking.
And at the same point, we do not know the extent of his injury. We do not know.
No.
The extent of what his injury is. I mean, that's something that has not been reported. And, of course, hey, there's, you know, issues with HIPAA violations there where you can't really speculate. But at the same point, I look at this, too, as, okay, everyone was concerned over the crash and his safety and everything. That's something that NASCAR right now is kind of desensitized to. Friday night during the truck series, I saw two or three wrecks. Drivers went airborne. There were sparks. They were sliding upside down 200, 300, 400 yards, and they all got out of their trucks like it was nothing, just kind of wiped off their suit and kept going. So NASCAR's seen this. And the way they've made these, because these cars are so safe now, drivers are willing to be more reckless. You can block going 200 miles an hour and put yourself at risk and have a vicious crash knowing that you're going to walk out and be okay. This is the way the sport works now, and it really is incredible to see someone like Ryan Newman get up the way he did without, to our knowledge, major damage.
Let's end with this. Earlier today, the NFL, the owners, they want a new CBA. They want to eliminate a preseason game. They want to add more playoff games and go to the 17-game schedule. Yes or no in your eyes? What are your thoughts?
If I'm taking that as a group, I'll say yes. I'm not wild about the 17-game schedule. I'm not. I mean, I think unless you can guarantee, hey, that 17th game, not the actual 17th game, but one of those 17 games is going to be a neutral site game. You know, if we get games in Orlando, that's great. But, you know, I'm fine more with the 16-game format, eliminating a preseason game, and adding to the playoffs. Because no one's going to complain about player safety if it's a playoff game, if there's something to play for. If it's a regular season game and you're adding the 17th game, then the argument of player safety, of course, is going to come up. But how many players are going to sit there and go, no. Adding a seventh team in the playoff format in each coming of the season.
Okay, the playoff, this is what I'm confused on. So you're adding one team to each conference, so we get to seven. Then there's only one seed gets a bye, so that there's not a second seed that gets a bye anymore.
Right.
It's a great answer.
It's weird. So it's like, only the one seed gets a bye, which I guess, in theory, makes the games much more competitive then for the rest of the field. It makes those, I mean, because how many times, Mark, have we seen, you know, week 15, week 16 roll around where there's two or three games left and the Patriots are like, all right, we're not playing anyone. We've wrapped up the East. We got home field. We got the tiebreaker against the second place team right now. I mean, we're fine. I mean, how many times have we seen that? So this is a way for the NFL to say, hey, we got to make those week 16, week 17 games, and ratings sometimes tend to dip unless it's a, you know, division championship on the line.
Yeah.
You got to make sure that these teams are playing now. So I get it from a rating standpoint. I get it because the NFL is a TV show. It is entertainment value. But, you know, again, the argument for player safety comes in hand with that 17th game. But, you know, we live in a league, and I'm not trying to bash anyone, but where players will willingly sign up knowing the risks of CTE and what can happen after football and do it. So, that is their choice to make. As a consumer, you know, I'm not going to shy away from another week of football.
I just like the NFL, which is king in this country when it comes to sports. It's like, you know what? Let's expand. More regular season, more playoffs. Give the people what they want. And
and look at what they're doing with the combine now. TV show. It's primetime television.
Yes. But college football is like, no, we can't expand the playoff. What are you, crazy? That's my favorite part.
But like everyone, and I get piled on. I'm fine with the playoff being at four. I'm perfectly fine with it. just because you win your conference or you're the best in the conference doesn't mean you get a shot every year. And look, I think it makes the games much more compelling. Like, you want playoffs. Okay, you want the system. You want it to be exact. Oh, we want eight or we want six. Every team deserves a shot. And I get that, understanding the territory where I'm in right now, that this is UCF, a team that could have, and in a lot of cases, you can make the argument, should have been in the playoff one of those years. But, you know, you're devaluing the regular season in my mind. And just because you're saying, oh, we don't have that quarterfinal or those buys and that sixth seed plays a three or whatever, I mean, that's Penn State, Ohio State. That's Florida, Georgia. That's Oklahoma, Texas. That's USC, Notre Dame. I mean, you're getting those quarterfinal games in week 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 leading up to it.
You're ready. You're ready to be on the playoff board for college football. I can tell.
I'm not.
Yeah, you would. Yeah, they'll pay you well. You'll make it work.
I'll talk about it. I'm fine with that.
What do you got coming up for the next couple of days with Spectrum Sports 360?
Yeah, exciting stuff. Obviously, like you, Mark, I'm waiting for the NBA to come back, which it does tonight. But Magic, of course, play tomorrow night at home against the Mavericks. First look at Luka Doncic this year. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm interested to see what the Magic are going to do. Obviously, the Aaron Gordon drama from the All-Star game is kind of carried over, but it sort of died off a little bit. So that's something we're really looking at. We got a ton of interesting features coming up. A lot of good stuff. Pat Welter just aired a phenomenal one last night. If you haven't seen it, please go watch it on our website, mynews13.com/sports. And, you know, we just finished one big event, one of two speed weeks at Daytona International Speedway, and now we're gearing up for Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill, man. So it never stops.
It never stops, just like this guy's jumper on the basketball court. His name is Luke Hendrick.
It has been a while. It is rusty.
Luke, thanks for your help, man, and have a great weekend, all right?
Thanks, man. Be well.